Tomorrow we're going to start early and head out into the rot and ruin. We'll go deep, like Charlie does. I want you to see firsthand what he does and what I do, and then you can make your own decisions. Decisions about what? About a lot of things, kiddo. And with that, Tom went inside and to bed. Chapter 6. Tom and Benny left at dawn and headed down to the southeastern gate. The gatekeeper had Tom sign the usual waiver that absolved the town and the gatekeeping staff of all liability if anything untoward happened once they crossed into the ruin. A vendor sold Tom a dozen bottles of cadaverine, which they sprinkled on their clothing, and a jar of peppermint goo they dabbed on their upper lips to kill their own sense of smell. Will this stuff stop the Zoms? Nothing stops them, said Tom. But this slows them down, makes most of them hesitate before biting, even drives some away. It gives you an edge and a little breathing room, but don't think you can stroll through a crowd of them with no risk. That's encouraging, Benny said under his breath. They were dressed for a long hike. Tom had instructed Benny to wear good walking shoes, jeans, a durable shirt, and a hat to keep the sun from boiling his brains. If it's not already too late, Tom said. Benny made a rude gesture when Tom wasn't looking. Despite the heat, Tom wore a lightweight jacket with lots of pockets. He had an old army gun belt around his narrow waist, with a pistol snugged into a worn leather holster. Benny wasn't allowed to have a gun yet. Eventually, Tom said, then added, maybe. I learned gun safety in school, Benny protested. You didn't learn it from me, Tom said with finality. The last thing Tom strapped on was a sword. Benny watched with interest as Tom slung a long strap diagonally across his body, from left shoulder to right hip, with the hilt standing above his shoulder so that he could reach up and over for a fast right-handed draw. The sword was a katana, a Japanese longsword that Benny had seen Tom practice with every day for as long as he could remember. That sword was the only thing about his brother that Benny thought was cool. Benny's mom, who was Tom's adopted mother, was Irish, but their father had been Japanese. Tom once told Benny that the Imura family went all the way back to the samurai days of ancient Japan. He showed Benny picture books of fierce-looking Japanese men in armor, samurai warriors. "Are you a samurai?" Benny had asked when he was 9. "There are no samurai anymore," Tom said. But even back then, Benny thought that Tom had a funny look on his face when he said that. Like maybe there was more to say on the subject, but he didn't want to say it right then. When Benny brought the subject up a couple of times since, the answer was always the same. Even so, Tom was pretty damn good with the sword. He could draw fast as lightning, and Benny had seen him do a trick once when Tom thought no one else was looking. He threw a handful of grapes into the air, then drew his sword and cut 5 of them in half before they fell to the grass. The blade was a blur. Later, after Tom had gone off to his store, Benny counted the grapes. Tom had thrown 6 into the air. He'd only missed 1. That was sweet. Of course, Benny would sooner eat broken glass than tell Tom how impressive he thought it was. "Why are you bringing that?" he asked as Tom adjusted the lay of the strap. "It's quiet," Tom said. Benny understood that. Noise attracted Zoms. A sword was quieter than a gun, but it also meant getting closer. Benny didn't think it was a very smart idea. He said as much, and Tom just shrugged. "Then why bring the gun?" Benny persisted. "'Cause sometimes quiet doesn't matter." Tom patted his pockets to do a quick inventory to make sure he had everything he needed. "Okay," he said. "Let's go. We're burning daylight." Tom tipped a couple of fence runners to bang on drums 600 yards north, and as soon as that drew away the wandering Zoms, Tom and Benny slipped out into the great rotten ruin and headed for the tree line. Chong waved to them from the corner tower. "We need to move fast for the first half mile," cautioned Tom, and he broke into a jog trot that was fast enough to get them out of scent range, but slow enough for Benny to match. A few of the zombies staggered after them, but the fence runners banged on the drums again. And the zombies, incapable of holding on to more than one reaction at a time, turned back toward the noise. The Amora brothers vanished into the shadows under the trees. When they finally slowed to a walk, Benny was sweating. It was a hot start to what would be a scorcher of a day. The air was thick with mosquitoes and flies, and the trees were alive with the sound of chattering birds. Far above them, the sun was a white hole in the sky.
"We're not being followed," Tom said.
"Who said we were?"
"Well, ever since we left, you keep looking back toward the fence line."
"No, I don't."
"Or are you looking to see if any of your friends came to see you off?"
"Other than Chong, I mean.
Maybe a certain red-haired girl?"
Benny stared at him.
"You are completely delusional."
"You're going to tell me that you don't have a thing for Nix Riley?"
"A world of no!"
"How come I found a sheet of paper with her name written on it maybe a million times?"
"Must have been Morgie's."
"It was your handwriting."
"Then I guess I was practicing my penmanship. What is it with you?" "I told you I don't have a thing for Nix. Let it go."
Tom turned away without another word, but Benny caught his smile. He cursed under his breath for the next mile.
"How far are we going?" Benny asked.
"Far. But don't worry, there are way stations where we can crash if we don't make it back tonight."
Benny looked at him as if he'd just suggested they set themselves on fire and go swimming in gasoline.
"Wait, you're saying we could be out all night?"
"Sure. You know I'm out there for days at a time. You're going to have to do what I do. Besides, except for some wanderers, most of the dead in this area have long since been cleaned out. Every week, I have to go farther away."
"Don't they just come to you?"
Tom shook his head. "There are wanderers, what the fence guards call gnomes, short for nomadic zombies. But most don't travel. You'll see." The forest was old, but surprisingly lush in the late August heat. Tom found fruit trees, and they ate their fill of sweet pears as they walked. Benny began filling his pockets with them, but Tom shook his head. "They're heavy, and they'll slow you. Besides, I picked a route that'll take us through what used to be farm country. Lots of fruit growing wild. Some vegetables, too. Wild beans and such." Benny looked at the fruit in his hand, sighed, and let them fall.
"How come nobody comes out here to farm this stuff?" he asked.
"People are scared."
"Why? There's got to be 40 guys working the fence."
"No. It's not the dead that scare them. People in town don't trust anything out here. They think there's a disease infesting everything. Food, the livestock that have run wild over the last 14 years, everything."
"Yeah,"
Benny said diffidently. He'd heard that talk.
"So, it's not true?"
"You ate those pears without a thought."
"You handed them to me."
Tom smiled.
"Oh, so you trust me now.
You're a dork, but I don't think you want me to turn into a zom."
"Wouldn't have to get on you about cleaning your room, so let's not roll it out."
"You're so funny, I almost peed my pants," Benny said without expression. Then said, "Wait, I don't get it. Traders bring in food all the time. And all the cows and chickens and stuff, they were brought to town by travelers and hunters and people like that, right?
So why do people think it's safe to eat that stuff and not the food growing wild out here?"
"Yeah."
"Good question."
"Well, what's the answer?"
"The people in town trust what's inside the fence. Currently inside the fence. If it came from outside, they remark on it. Like on the second Wednesday of every month, folks will say, "About time for the wagons, ain't it?" But they don't really acknowledge where the wagons come from or why the wagons are covered in sheet metal and the horses wrapped in carpet and chainmail. They know, but they don't know. Or don't want to know. That doesn't make any sense. Tom walked a bit before he said, "There's town, and there's the rot and ruin. Most of the time, they aren't in the same world, you know." Benny nodded. "I guess I do." He stopped and stared ahead with narrowed eyes. Benny couldn't see anything, but then Tom grabbed his arm and pulled him quickly off the road and led him to a wide circle through the groves of trees. Benny peered between the hundreds of tree trunks and finally caught a glimpse of three Zoms, shuffling slowly along the road. One was whole, the other two had ragged flesh where other Zoms had feasted on them while they were still alive. Benny opened his mouth and almost asked Tom how he knew they were there, but Tom made a shushing gesture and continued on, moving soundlessly through the soft summer grass. When they were well clear, Tom took them back up to the road.
"I didn't even see them," Benny gasped, turning to look back.
"Neither did I."
"Then how—"
"You get a feel for this sort of thing." Benny held his ground, still looking back.
"I don't get it. There were only three of them. Couldn't you have... you know..."
"What?"
"Killed them," said Benny flatly. "Charlie Mathias said he'll go out of his way to chop a Zom or two. He doesn't run from anything."
"Is that what he says?" Tom murmured, then continued down the road. Benny shrugged, then followed. Chapter 7. Twice more, Tom pulled Benny off the road so they could circle around wandering zombies. After the second time, once they were clear of the creature's olfactory range, Benny grabbed Tom's arm and demanded,
"Why didn't you just pop a cap in them?"
Tom gently pulled his arm free. He shook his head and didn't answer.
"What? Are you afraid of them?"
Benny yelled. "Keep your voice down."
"Why? You're afraid a Zom will come after you, big tough zombie killer who's afraid to kill a zombie?"
"Benny," said Tom with thin patience, "sometimes you say some truly stupid things."
"Whatever,"
Benny said, and pushed past him.
"Do you know where you're going?"
Tom said when Benny was a dozen paces along the road.
"This way."
"I'm not," said Tom, and he began climbing the slope of a hill that rose gently from the left-hand side of the road. Benny stood in the middle of the road and seethed for a full minute. He was muttering the worst words he knew all the while he climbed up the hill after Tom. There was a narrower road at the top of the hill, and they followed that in silence. By 10 o'clock, they'd entered a series of steeper hills and valleys that were shaded by massive oak trees with cool green leaves. Tom cautioned Benny to be quiet as they climbed to the top of a ridge that overlooked a small country lane. At the curve of the road was a small cottage with a fenced yard and an elm tree so gnarled and ancient that it looked like the world had grown up around it. Two figures stood in the yard, but they were too small to see. Tom flattened out at the top of the ridge and motioned for Benny to join him. Tom pulled his field glasses from a belt holster and studied the figures for a long minute. "What do you think they are?" He handed the monoculars to Benny, who snatched them with more force than was necessary. Benny peered through the lenses in the direction Tom pointed.
"They're Zoms," Benny said.
"No kidding, boy genius. But what are they?"
"Dead people."
"Ah."
"Ah, what?"
"You just said it. They're dead people. They were once living people."
"So what? Everybody dies."
"True," admitted Tom. "How many dead people have you seen?"
"What kind of dead? Living dead like them, or dead dead like Aunt Kathy?"
Either. Both.
I don't know. The zombies at the fence, and a couple of people in town, I guess.
Aunt Kathy was the first person I ever knew who died. I was like 6 when she died. I remember the funeral and all.
Benny continued to watch the zombies. One was a tall man, the other a young woman or teenage girl.
And Morgie Mitchell's dad died after that scaffolding collapse. I went to his funeral, too.
Did you see either of them quieted?
Quieted was the acceptable term for the necessary act of inserting a metal spike, called a sliver, into the base of the skull to sever the brainstem. Since first night, anyone who died would reanimate as a zombie. Bites made it happen too, but really any recently deceased person would come back. Every adult in town carried at least one sliver, though Benny had never seen one used.
No, he said. You wouldn't let me stay in the room when Aunt Kathy died.
And I wasn't there when Morgie's dad died. I just went to the funerals.
What were the funerals like? For you, I mean.
I don't know.
Kind of quick, kind of sad.
And then everyone went to a party at someone's house and ate a lot of food.
Morgie's mom got totally shit-faced. Language.
Morgie's mom got drunk, Benny said in a way that suggested having his language corrected was as difficult as having his teeth pulled.
Morgie's uncle sat in the corner singing Irish songs and crying with the guys from the farm.
That was a year, year and a half ago, right? First spring planting?
Yeah. They were building a corn silo, and Mr. Mitchell was using the rope hoist to send some tools up to the crew working on the silo roof. One of the scaffolding pipes broke, and a whole bunch of stuff came crashing down on them.
It was an accident.
Well, yeah, sure.
How'd Morgie take it?
How do you think he took it? He was
he was screwed up.
Benny handed back the glasses.
He's still a little screwed up.
How's he screwed up?
I don't know.
He misses his dad. They used to hang out a lot. Mr. Mitchell was pretty cool, I guess.
Do you miss Aunt Kathy?
Sure. But I was little. I don't remember her that much. I remember she smiled a lot. She was pretty. I remember she used to sneak me extra ice cream from the store where she worked. Half an extra ration.
Tom nodded. Do you remember what she looked like?
Like Mom, said Benny. She looked a lot like Mom.
You were too little to remember Mom.
I remember her, Benny said with an edge in his voice. He took out his wallet and showed Tom the image behind the glassine cover. Maybe I don't remember her really well, but I think about her. All the time. Dad, too. I can even remember what she wore on first night. A white dress with red sleeves. I remember the sleeves.
Tom closed his eyes and sighed, and his lips moved. Benny thought he echoed the words, red sleeves. Tom opened his eyes.
I didn't know you carried this. His smile was small and sad.
I remember Mom. She was more of a mother to me than my mom ever was. I was so happy when Dad married her. I can remember every line on her face. The color of her hair. Her smile. Kathy was a year younger, but they could have been twins.
Benny sat up and wrapped his arms around his knees. His brain felt twisted around. There were so many emotions wired into memories, old and new. He glanced at his brother.
You were older than I am now when, you know, it happened.
I turned 20 a few days before first night. I was in the police academy. Dad married your mom when I was 16.
You got to know them.
I never did. I wish I'd...
He left the rest unsaid. Tom nodded.
Me too, kiddo.
They sat in the shade of their private memories.
"Tell me something, Benny," said Tom. "What would you have done if one of your friends, say, Chong or Morgie, had come to Aunt Kathy's funeral and took a leak in her coffin?" Benny was so startled by the question that his answer was unguarded.
"I'd have jacked them up. I mean, jacked them up."
Tom nodded. Benny stared at him.
"What kind of a question is that, though?"
"Indulge me. Why would you have freaked out on your friends?"
"Because they dissed Aunt Kathy, why do you think?"
"But she's dead."
"What the hell does that matter?
Pissing in her coffin? I would so kick their asses."
"But why?"
"Aunt Kathy was beyond caring.
This is her funeral. Maybe she's still, I don't know, there in some way.
Like Pastor Kellogg always says."
"What does he say?"
"That the spirits of those we love are always with us."
"Okay. What if you didn't believe that?
What if you believed that Aunt Kathy was only a body in a box? And your friends peed on her?"
"What do you think?" Benny snapped. "I'd still kick their asses."
"I believe you.
But why?"
"Because..." Benny began, but then hesitated, unsure of how to express what he was feeling.
"Because Aunt Kathy was mine, you know. She's my aunt, my family. They don't have any right to disrespect my family."
"No more than you'd go take a crap on Morgie Mitchell's father's grave. Or dig him up and pour garbage on his bones. You wouldn't do anything like that?"
Benny was appalled.
"What's your damage, man? Where do you come up with this crap?
Of course I wouldn't do anything sick like that. God, who do you think I am?"
"Shh.
Keep your voice down," cautioned Tom.
"So, you wouldn't disrespect Morgie's dad? Alive or dead?"
"Hell no."
"Language." Benny said it slower and with more emphasis.
"Hell no."
"Glad to hear it." Tom held out the field glasses. "Take a look at the two dead people down there. Tell me what you see."
"So we're back to business now?" Benny gave him a look.
"You're deeply weird, man. Just look." Benny sighed and grabbed the binoculars out of Tom's hand, put them to his eyes, stared, sighed.
"Yep, two Zoms. Same two Zoms.
Be specific."
"Okay."
"Okay, two Zoms. One man, one woman, standing in the same place as before. Big yawn."
Tom said,
"Those dead people, what about them?"
"They used to be somebody's family," said Tom quietly. "The male looks old enough to have been someone's granddad. He had a family. Friends. A name. He was somebody."
Benny lowered the glasses and started to speak.
"No," said Tom. "Keep looking. Look at the woman."
"She was what? 18 years old when she died. Might have been pretty. Those rags she's wearing might have been a waitress's uniform once. She could have worked at a diner right next to Aunt Kathy. She had people at home who loved her."
"Come on, man, don't..."
"People who worried when she was late getting home. People who wanted her to grow up happy. People. A mom and a dad. Maybe brothers and sisters. Grandparents. People who believed that girl had a life in front of her. That old man might be her granddad."
"But she's one of them, man. She's dead,"
Benny said defensively.
"Sure. Almost everyone who ever lived is dead. More than 6 billion people are dead. And every last one of them had family once. Every last one of them were family once. At one time there was someone like you who would have kicked the crap out of anyone, stranger or best friend, who harmed or disrespected that girl. Or the old man." Benny was shaking his head.
No, 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 it's not the same. These are Zoms, man. They kill people. They eat people.
They used to be people.
But they died.
Sure. Like Aunt Kathy and Mr. Mitchell.
No. Aunt Kathy got cancer. Mr. Mitchell died in an accident.
Sure. But if someone in town hadn't quieted them, they'd have become living dead, too.
Don't even pretend you don't know that.
Don't pretend you haven't thought about all that happening to Aunt Kathy. He nodded down the hill. Those two down there caught a disease. Benny said nothing. He learned about it in school, though no one knew for sure what had actually happened. Some sources said it was a virus that was mutated by radiation from a returning space probe. Others said it was a new type of flu that came over from China. Chong believed it was something that got out of a lab somewhere. The only thing everyone agreed on was that it was a disease of some kind. That guy down there was probably a farmer, Tom said. The girl was a waitress. I'm pretty sure neither of them was involved in the space program, or worked in some lab where they researched viruses. What happened to them was an accident. They got sick, Benny, and they died. Benny said nothing. How do you think Mom and Dad died? No answer. Benny, how do you think they died on first night? Benny said irritably. They did. But how? Benny said nothing. How?
You let them die, Benny said in a savage whisper. Words tumbled out of him in a disjointed sputter. Dad got sick, and then Mom tried to, and you just ran away.
Tom said nothing, but sadness darkened his eyes, and he shook his head slowly.
I remember it, Benny growled. I remember you running away.
You were a baby.
I remember it.
You should have told me, Benny.
Why?
So you can make up a lie about it when you just ran away and left my mom like that? The words "my mom" hung in the air between them. Tom winced. You think I just ran away? He said.
I don't think it, Tom. I remember it.
Do you remember why I ran?
Yeah, 'cause you're a freaking coward is why.
Jesus, Tom whispered. He adjusted the strap that held the sword in place and sighed again. Benny, this isn't the time or place for this, but sometime soon we're going to have a serious talk about the way things were back then and the way things are now.
There's nothing you can say that's going to change the truth.
No. The truth is the truth. What changes is what we know about it and what we're willing to believe.
Yeah, whatever.
If you ever want to know my side of things, said Tom, I'll tell you. There's a lot you were too young to know then, and maybe you're still too young now. Silence washed back and forth between them. For right now, Benny, I want you to understand that when Mom and Dad died, it was from the same thing that killed those two down there. Benny said nothing. Tom plucked a stalk of sweet grass and put it between his teeth. You didn't really know Mom and Dad, but let me ask you this. If someone was to piss on them or abuse them, even now, even considering what they had to have become during first night, would it be okay with you?
Screw you.
Tell me.
No, okay? No, it wouldn't freaking be okay with me. You happy now?
Why not, Benny?
Because why not?
They're only Zoms. Benny abruptly got up and walked down the hill, away from the farm and away from Tom. He stood looking back along the road they'd traveled, as if he could see the fence line. Tom waited a long time before he got up and joined him. I know this is hard, kiddo, he said gently, but we live in a pretty hard world. We struggle to live. We're always on our guard, and we have to toughen ourselves just to get through each day. And each night.
I hate you.
Maybe. I doubt it, but it doesn't matter right now. He gestured toward the path that led back home. Everybody west of here has lost someone. Maybe someone close, or maybe a distant cousin 3 times removed, but everyone lost someone. Benny said nothing. I don't believe that you would disrespect anyone in our town or in the whole West. I also don't believe, I don't want to believe, that you disrespect the mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, sisters and brothers who live out here in the great rot and ruin. He put his hands on Benny's shoulders and turned him around. Benny resisted, but Tom Amuro was strong. When they were both facing east, Tom said, "Every dead person out there deserves respect, even in death. Even when we fear them. Even when we have to kill them. They aren't just zombies, Benny. That's a side effect of a disease, or from some kind of radiation, or something else that we don't understand. I'm no scientist, Benny. I'm a simple man, doing a job."
"Yeah?
You're trying to sound all noble, but you kill them." Benny had tears in his eyes. "Yes," Tom said softly. "I do. I've killed hundreds of them. If I'm smart and careful, and lucky, I'll kill hundreds more." Benny shoved him with both hands. It only pushed Tom back a half step.
"I don't understand."
"No, you don't. I hope you will, though. You talk about respect for the dead, and yet you kill them. This isn't about the killing. It isn't and never should be about the killing."
"Then what?"
Benny sneered. "The money? Are we rich?"
"No."
"Then it's obviously not about the money."
"Then what?"
"It's about the why of the killing. For the living. For the dead," Tom said. "It's about closure." Benny shook his head. "Come with me, kiddo. It's time you understood how the world works. It's time you learned what the family business is all about." Chapter 8. They walked for miles under the hot sun. The peppermint gel ran off with their sweat and had to be reapplied hourly. Benny was quiet for most of the trip, but as his feet got sore and his stomach started to rumble, he turned cranky.
"Are we there yet?"
"No."
"How far is it?"
"A bit."
"I'm hungry."
"We'll stop soon."
"What's for lunch?"
"Beans and jerky."
"I hate jerky."
"You bring anything else?" Tom asked.
"No."
"Jerky it is, then." The roads Tom picked were narrow and often turned from asphalt to gravel to dirt.
"We haven't seen a zom in a couple of hours," Benny said. "How come?"
"Unless they hear or smell something that draws them, they tend to stick close to home."
"Home?"
"Well, to the places they used to live or work."
"Why?"
Tom took a couple of minutes on that. "There are lots of theories, but that's all we have. Just theories. Some folks say that the dead lack the intelligence to think that there's anywhere other than where they're standing. If nothing attracts them or draws them, they'll just stay right where they are."
"But they need to hunt, don't they?"
"Need is a tricky word. Most experts agree that the dead will attack and kill, but it's not been established that they actually hunt. Hunting implies need, and we don't know that the dead need to do anything."
"I don't understand."
They crested a hill and looked down a dirt road to where an old gas station sat beneath a weeping willow. "Have you ever heard of one of them just wasting away and dying of hunger?" Tom asked.
"No,
but the people in town think that the dead survive by eating the living, right?" Well, sure, but what living do you think they're eating?
Huh?
Think about it. There are more than 300 million living dead in America alone. Throw in another 30-odd million in Canada and 110 million in Mexico, and you have something like 450 million living dead. The fall happened 14 years ago, so what are they eating to stay alive?
Benny thought about it.
Mr. Feeney says they eat each other.
They don't, said Tom.
Once a body has started to cool, they stop feeding on it. That's why there are so many partially eaten living dead. They won't attack or eat one another even if you lock them in the same house for years on end. People have done it.
What happens to them?
The trapped ones? Nothing.
Nothing? They don't rot away and die?
They're already dead, Benny. A shadow passed over the valley and momentarily darkened Tom's face.
But that's one of the mysteries. They don't rot.
Not completely.
They decay to a certain point, and then they just stop rotting.
No one knows why.
What do you mean? How can something just stop rotting? That's stupid.
It's not stupid, kiddo. It's a mystery. It's as much a mystery as why the dead rise in the first place. Why they attack humans. Why they don't attack one another.
All mysteries.
Maybe they eat, like, cows and stuff.
Tom shrugged.
Some do, if they can catch them. A lot of people don't know that, by the way, but it's true. They'll eat anything alive that they can catch. Dogs, cats, birds, even bugs.
Well, then, that explains
no, Tom interrupted.
Most animals are too fast.
Ever try to catch a cat who doesn't want to be caught? Now imagine doing that if you're only able to shuffle along slowly and can't strategize. If a bunch of the dead came upon cows in a pen or fenced field, they might be able to kill them and eat. But all the penned animals have either long since escaped or they died off in the first few months.
No.
The dead don't need to feed at all. They just exist.
Morgie says that out here wild animals turn into zombies.
Nope. As far as anyone's been able to tell, only humans turn into the living dead. We don't have the science to try and figure out why, and I don't know if it's true everywhere, but we know it to be true here. Otherwise, every time you bit into a chili dog, it'd bite back. They reached the gas station. Tom stopped by the old pump and knocked on the metal casing three times, then twice, then four more times.
What are you doing?
Saying hello.
Hello to...
There was a low moan, and Benny turned to see a gray-skinned man shuffling slowly around the corner of the building. He wore ancient coveralls that were stained with dark blotches, and, incongruously, a garland of fresh flowers around his neck, marigolds and honeysuckle. The man's face was shaded for a few steps, but then he crossed into the sunlight and Benny nearly screamed. The man's eyes were missing, and the sockets gaped emptily. The moaning mouth was toothless, the lips and cheeks sunken in. Worst of all, as the zombie raised its hands toward them, Benny saw that all of its fingers had been clipped off at the primary knuckles. Benny gagged and stepped back, his muscles tense to turn and run, but Tom put a hand on his shoulder and gave him a reassuring squeeze.
"Wait," said Tom.
A moment later, the door to the gas station opened, and a pair of sleepy-eyed young women came outside, followed by a slightly older man with a long brown beard. They were all thin and dressed in tunics that looked like they had been made from old bedsheets. Each wore a thick garland of flowers. The trio looked at Benny and Tom, and then at the zombie.
"Leave him be," cried the youngest.
A black girl in her late teens, as she ran across the dirt to the dead man and stood between him and the Amora brothers, her feet planted, her arms spread to shield the zombie. Tom raised a hand and took his hat off so they could see his face.
"Peace, little sister," he said.
No one's here to do harm. The bearded man fished eyeglasses from a pocket beneath his tunic and squinted through dirty lenses.
Tom, he said. Tom Amura?
Hey, Brother David. He put his hand on Benny's shoulder. This is my brother Benjamin.
What are you doing here?
Passing through, said Tom. But I wanted to pay my respects, and to teach Benny the ways of this world. He's never been outside the fence before. Benny caught the way Tom put emphasis on the word this. Brother David walked over, scratching his beard. Up close, he was older than he looked. Maybe 40, with deep brown eyes and a few missing teeth. His clothing was clean but threadbare. He smelled of flowers, garlic, and mint. The man studied Benny for a long moment, during which Tom did nothing and Benny fidgeted.
He's not a believer, said Brother David.
Belief is tough to come by in these times, said Tom.
You believe?
Seeing is believing. Benny thought their exchange had the cadence of a church litany, as if it was something the two of them had said before and would say again. Brother David bent toward Benny.
Tell me, young brother, do you come here bringing hurt and harm to the children of God?
No.
Do you bring hurt and harm to the children of Lazarus?
I don't know who they are, mister. I'm just here with my brother. Brother David turned toward the women, who were using gentle pushes to steer the zombie back around the far side of the building.
Old Roger there is one of Lazarus's children.
What? You mean he's not a zomb? Tom made a noise to stop him. A tolerant smile flickered over Brother David's face.
We don't use that word, little brother.
Benny didn't know how to answer that, so Tom came to his rescue. The name comes from Lazarus of Bethany, a man who was raised from the dead by Jesus.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that in church.
The mention of church brightened Brother David's smile.
You believe in God?
He asked hopefully.
I guess.
In these times, said Brother David, that's better than most.
He threw a covert wink at Tom. Benny looked past Brother David to where the girls had taken the zombie.
I'm, like, totally confused here. That guy was a, you know, he's dead, right?
Living dead,
corrected Brother David.
Right. Why wasn't he trying to, you know?
He mimed grabbing and biting.
He doesn't have teeth, said Tom.
And you saw his hands. Benny nodded.
Did you guys do that?
He asked Brother David.
No, little brother,
Brother David said with a grimace.
No other people did that to Old Roger.
Who? Demanded Benny.
Don't you mean why?
No. Who? Who'd do something like that?
Brother David said,
Old Roger is only one of the children who have been tortured like that. You can see them all over this county. Men and women with their eyes cut out, their teeth pulled or jaws shot away. Most of them missing fingers or whole hands. And I won't talk about some of the other things I've seen done. Stuff you're too young to know about, little brother.
I'm 15, said Benny.
You're too young. I can remember when being 15 meant you were still a child.
Brother David turned and watched the two young women return without the old zombie.
He's in the shed, said the black girl.
But he's agitated, said the other, a pale-skinned redhead in her mid-20s.
He'll quiet down after a spell, said Brother David.
The women stood by the gas pump and eyed Tom, although Tom seemed to suddenly find something fascinating about the movement of the clouds. Benny's usual inclination was to make a joke at Tom's expense, but he didn't feel like it. He turned back to the bearded man.
"Who's doing all this stuff you're talking about?"
"To that old man. To those others you mentioned.
What kind of dirtbags are out here doing that stuff?"
"Bounty hunters," said the redhead.
"Killers," said the black girl.
"Why?"
"If I had an answer to that," said Brother David, "I'd be a saint instead of a way station monk."
Benny turned to Tom.
"I don't get it. You're a bounty hunter."
"I guess to some people that's what I am."
"Do you do this kind of stuff?"
"What do you think?" Tom asked. But Benny was already shaking his head. Tom queried,
"What do you even know about bounty hunters?"
"They kill zombies," Benny said,
then flinched as he saw the looks of distaste on the faces of Brother David and the two women.
"Well, they do. That's what bounty hunters are there for.
They go out here into the rotten ruin and they hunt the, you know,
the living dead."
"Why?" asked Tom.
"For money."
"Who pays them?"
asked Brother David.
"People in town. People in other towns," said Benny. "I heard the government pays them sometimes. Mostly for clearing out zombies on trade routes and stuff like that."
"Who'd you hear that from?" asked Tom.
"Charlie Mathias."
Brother David turned a questioning face to Tom, who said, "Charlie Pink Eye." The faces of the monk and the two women fell into sickness. Brother David closed his eyes and shook his head slowly from side to side.
"What's wrong?" asked Benny.
"You can stay to dinner,"
Brother David said stiffly, eyes still closed.
"God requires mercy and sharing from all of his children. But, once you've eaten, I'd like you to leave."
Tom put his hands on the monk's shoulder. "We're moving on now." The redhead stepped toward Tom.
"It was a lovely day until you came."
"You should get out of here," said the younger woman.
"No,"
said Brother David sharply, then repeated it more gently.
"No, Sarah," he said to the redhead. "No, Shanti," he said to the black teenager. "Tom's our friend, and we're being rude."
He opened his eyes, and Benny thought that the man now looked 70.
"I'm sorry, Tom. Please forgive the sisters. And please forgive me for..."
"No," said Tom. "It's okay. Sarah's right. It was a lovely day, and saying that man's name here was wrong of me. I apologize to you, to her, to Sister Shanti, and to Old Roger. This is Benny's first time out here in the ruin. He met that man, and had heard a lot of stories. Stories of hunting out here. He's a boy, and he doesn't understand. I brought him out here to let him know how things are, how things fall out." He paused. "I haven't taken him to Sunset Hollow yet. You understand?" The three children of God studied him for a while, and then one by one they nodded.
"What's Sunset Hollow?"
Benny asked. But Tom didn't answer.
"And I thank you for your offer of a meal," said Tom. "But we've got miles to go, and I think Benny's going to have a lot of questions to ask. Some of them are better asked elsewhere."
Sister Sarah reached up and touched Tom's face.
"I'm sorry for my words." Sister Shanti touched his chest. "Me too."
"You've got nothing to be sorry about," Tom said.
The women smiled at him and caressed his cheek. Shanti turned and placed her hands on either side of Benny's face.
"May God protect your heart out here in the world."
With that, she kissed him on the forehead and walked away.
Sister Sarah smiled at the brothers and followed Shanti. Benny turned to Tom.
Did I miss something?
Probably, said Tom. Come on, kiddo. Let's roll. Brother David shifted to stand in Tom's path.
Brother, he said, I'll ask once and then be done with it.
Ask away.
Are you sure about what you're doing?
Sure?
No. But I'm set on doing it. He fished in his pocket and brought out 3 vials of cadaverine. Here, brother. May it help you in your work. Brother David nodded his thanks.
God go with you, and before you, and within you.
They shook hands, and Tom stepped back onto the dirt road. Benny, however, lingered for a moment longer.
Look, mister, he began slowly. I don't know what I said or did that was wrong, but I'm sorry, you know. Tom brought me out here, and he's a bit crazy, and I don't know what...
He trailed off. There was no road map in his head to guide him through this conversation. Brother David offered his hand and gave him the same blessing he bestowed upon Tom.
Yeah, said Benny.
You too. Okay? He hurried to catch up to Tom, who was 50 yards down the road. When he looked back, the monk was standing by the rusting gas pump. Brother David lifted his hand, but whether it was some kind of blessing or a gesture of farewell, Benny didn't know. Either way, it creeped him out.
Chapter 9. When they were far down the road, Benny asked,
What was that all about? Why'd that guy get so jacked about me mentioning Charlie?
Not everyone thinks Charlie's the man, kiddo.
You jealous?
Tom laughed.
God, the day I'm jealous of someone like Charlie Pink Eye is the day I'll cover myself in steak sauce and walk out into a crowd of the living dead.
Hilarious, said Benny sourly. What's with all that Children of God, Children of Lazarus stuff? What are they doing out here?
Brother David and his group are all over the ruin. I've met travelers who've seen them as far east as Pennsylvania, even all the way down to Mexico City. I first saw them about a year after the fall. A whole bunch of them heading across the country in an old school bus pulled by horses, with scripture passages painted all over it. Not sure how they got started or who chose the name. Even Brother David doesn't know. To him, it's like they always were.
Is he nuts?
I think the expression used to be touched by God.
So that would be a yes.
If he's nuts, then at least his heart's in the right place. The children don't believe in violence of any kind.
But they're okay with you, even though you kill Zoms?
Tom shook his head.
No, they don't like what I do. But they accept my explanation for why I do it. And Brother David and a few others have seen how I do it. They don't approve, but they don't condemn me for it. They think I'm misguided, but well-intentioned.
And Charlie? What do they think of him?
Can't be anything good. They believe Charlie Pink Eye to be an evil man. Him and his jackass buddy, the Motor City Hammer. Bunch of others. Most of the bounty hunters, in fact, and I can't fault the children for those beliefs.
Benny said nothing.
He still thought Charlie Mathias was cool as all hell.
So, these children, what do they actually do?
They tend to the dead. If they find a town, they'll go through the houses and look for photos of the people who lived there, and then they try and round them up if they're still wandering around the town. They put them in their houses, seal doors, write some prayers on the walls, and then move on. Most of them keep moving. Brother David's been here for a year or so, but I expect he'll move on too.
Charlie said that he rounds up Zoms too. He told us about a place in the mountains where he has a couple hundred of them staked out. He said it was one of the ways he and the Hammer were making the ruin a safer place.
Uh-huh, Tom said sourly. The traders call it the Hungry Forest.
I think Charlie cooked up that name. Very dramatic. But it's not the same as what the children do. Charlie rounds up Zoms and ties them to trees so that he can find them more easily when he gets a bounty job.
That sounds smart.
I never said Charlie wasn't smart. He's very smart. But he's also very twisted and dangerous, and his motives are not exactly admirable. He also does a lot of bulk work, cleaning out small towns and such for the traders. That doesn't make the people in town happy because it confuses the issue of identification when you wipe out a whole town of Zoms, but salvaging for stuff is more important. We've become an agricultural society. No one's made much of an effort to restart industry, and people seem to think that we can salvage forever for almost everything we need. It's like in the old days, when people drilled for oil for cars and factories without making much of an effort to find renewable sources for energy. It's a pillage and plunder mentality, and it makes us scavengers. That's not the best place to be on the food chain. Charlie's happy with it, though, because a cleanup job is big money. He looked back over his shoulder in the direction they'd come. The children, on the other hand, they may be crazy and they may be misguided, but they do what they believe is the right thing.
How do they round up Zoms, especially in a town full of them?
They wear carpet coats, and they know the tricks of moving quietly and using cadaverine to mask their living smells. Sometimes one or another of the children will come to town to buy some, but more often guys like me bring some out to them.
Don't they ever get attacked?
Tom nodded. All the time, sad to say. I know of at least 50 dead in this part of the country who used to be children. I'd quiet them, but Brother David won't let me. And I've even heard stories that some of the children give themselves to the dead. Benny stared at him.
Why?
Brother David says that some of the children believe that the dead are the meek who were meant to inherit the earth, and that all things under heaven are there to sustain them. They think that allowing the dead to feed on them is fulfilling God's will.
That's stupid, Benny said.
It is what it is. I think a lot of the children are people who didn't survive the fall. Oh, sure, their bodies did, but I think some fundamental part of them was broken by what happened. I was there. I can relate.
You're not crazy.
I have my moments, kiddo, believe me. Benny gave him a strange look. Then he smiled.
I think that red-headed woman's sister Sarah has the hots for you, as disgusting a concept as that seems.
Tom shook his head. Too young for me. Though, I thought she looked a bit like Nyx. What do you think?
I think you should shove that right up your...
And that's when they heard the gunshots. Chapter 10. When the first shot cracked through the air, Benny dropped to a crouch. But Tom stood straight and looked away to the northeast. When Tom heard the second shot, he turned his head slightly more to the north. Handgun, he said. Heavy caliber. 3 miles. Benny looked up at him through the arms he'd wrapped over his head.
Bullets can go 3 miles, can't they?
Not usually, said Tom. Even so, they aren't shooting at us. Benny straightened cautiously.
You can tell? How?
Echoes, he said. Those bullets didn't travel far. They're shooting at something close and hitting it.
It's cool that you know that. A little freaky, but cool.
Yeah, this whole thing is about me showing you how cool I am.
Oh, sarcasm, said Benny dryly. I get it.
Shut up, replied Tom with a grin.
No, you shut up.
They smiled at each other for the first time all day. Come on, said Tom. Let's go see what they're shooting at. He set off in the direction of the gunshot echoes. Benny stood watching him for a moment.
Wait, we're going toward the shooting?
Benny shook his head and followed as quickly as he could. Tom picked up the pace, and Benny, his stomach full of beans and the hated jerky, kept up. They followed a stream down to the lowlands, but Benny noticed that Tom never went closer than 1,000 yards to the running water of Coldwater Creek. He asked Tom about this. Tom asked, "Can you hear the water?" Benny strained to hear. "No?" "There's your answer. Flowing water is constant noise. It masks other sounds, which means it isn't safe unless you're traveling on it in a fast canoe, and this water isn't deep enough for that. We'll only go near it to cross it or fill our canteens. Otherwise, quiet is better for listening. Always remember that if we can hear something, then it can probably hear us. And if we can't hear something, then it might still be able to hear us, and we won't know about it until it's too late." However, as they followed the gunshot echoes, their path angled toward the stream. Tom stopped for a moment, and then shook his head in disapproval. "Not bright," he said, but didn't explain his comment. They ran on. As they moved, Benny practiced being quiet. It was harder than he thought, and for a while it sounded, to his ears, as if he was making a terrible racket. Twigs broke like firecrackers under his feet. His breath sounded like a wheezing dragon. The legs of his jeans whisked together like a cross-cut saw. Tom told him to focus on quieting one thing at a time. "Don't try to learn too many skills at once. Take a new skill and learn it by using it. Go from there." By the time they were close to where they thought the gunshots were being fired, Benny was moving more quietly and found that he enjoyed the challenge. It was like playing ghost tag with Chong and Morgie. Tom stopped and cocked his head to listen. He put a finger to his lips and gestured for Benny to remain still. They were in a field of tall grass, which led to a dense stand of birch trees. From beyond the trees, they could hear the sound of men laughing and shouting, and the occasional hollow crack of a pistol shot. "Stay here," Tom whispered, and then he moved as quick and quiet as a sudden breeze, vanishing into the tall grass. Benny lost track of him almost at once. More gunshots popped in the dry air. A full minute passed, and Benny felt a burning constriction in his chest and realized that he was holding his breath. He let it out and gulped in another. Where was Tom? Another minute, more laughter and shouts, a few scattered gunshots. A third minute, a fourth. Then something large and dark moved quickly toward him through the tall grass. "Tom!" Benny almost screamed the name, but Tom shushed him. His brother stepped close and bent to whisper. "Benny, listen to me. On the other side of those trees is something you need to see. If you're going to understand how things really are, you need to see."
"What is it?"
"Bounty hunters. Three of them. I've seen these three before, but never this close to town. I want you to come with me. Very quietly. I want you to watch, but don't say or do anything.
But
this will be ugly. Are you ready?"
"I...
yes or no?" "We can head northeast and continue on our way, or we can go home." Benny shook his head.
"No. I'm ready."
Tom smiled and squeezed his arm. "If things get serious, I want you to run and hide. Understand?"
"Yes,"
Benny said, but the word was like a thorn caught in his throat. Running and hiding. Was that the only strategy Tom knew? "Promise?"
"I promise."
"Good. Now follow me. When I move, you move. When I stop, you stop. Step only where I step. Got it?" "Good." Tom led the way through the tall grass, moving slowly, shifting his position in time with the fluctuations of the wind. When Benny realized this, it became easier to match his brother's movements step for step. They entered the trees, and Benny could more easily hear the laughter of the three men. They sounded drunk. Then he heard the whinny of a horse. A horse? The trees thinned, and Tom hunkered down and pulled Benny down with him. The scene before them was something out of a nightmare. Even as Benny took it in, a part of his mind was whispering to him that he would never forget what he was seeing. He could feel every detail being burned into his brain. Beyond the trees was a clearing bordered on two sides by switchbacks of the deep stream. The stream vanished around a sheer sandstone cliff that rose 30 feet above the tree line and reappeared on the opposite side of the clearing. Only a narrow dirt path led from the trees, in which the Amura brothers crouched to the spit of land framed by stream and cliff. It was a natural clearing that gave the men a clear view of approaches on all sides. A wagon with two big horses stood in the shade thrown by the birch trees. The back of the wagon was piled high with zombies that squirmed and writhed in a hopeless attempt to flee or attack. Hopeless, because beside the wagon was a growing pile of severed arms and legs. The zombies in the wagon were limbless cripples. A dozen other zombies milled by the sandstone wall of the cliff, and every time one of them would lumber after one of the men, it was driven back by a vicious kick. It was clear to Benny that two of the men knew some kind of martial art, because they used elaborate jumping and spinning kicks. The more dynamic the kick, the more the others laughed and applauded. As Benny listened, he realized that as one stepped up to confront a zombie, the other two men would name a kick. The men shouted bets to one another and then rated the kick for points. The two kick fighters took turns, while a third man kept score by drawing numbers in the dirt with a stick. The zombies had little hope of any effective attack. They were clustered on a narrow and almost waterlogged section of the clearing. Far worse than that, each and every one of them was blind. Their eye sockets were oozing masses of torn flesh and almost colorless blood. Benny looked at the zombies on the wagon and saw that they were all blind as well. He gagged, but clamped a hand to his mouth to keep the sound from escaping. The standing zombies were all battered hulks, barely able to stay on their feet, and it was clear that this game had been going on for a while. Benny knew the zombies were already dead, that they couldn't feel pain or know humiliation, but what he saw seared a mark on his soul.
"That one's about totally messed up," yelled a dark-skinned man with an eye patch. "Load him up."
The man, who apparently didn't know the fancy kicks, picked up a sword with a heavy, curved blade. Benny had seen pictures of one in the book The Arabian Nights, a scimitar. "Okay," said the swordsman. "What are the numbers?"
"Denny did his in 4 cuts in 3.1 seconds, said Eye Patch.
"Oh, hell. I got that beat. Time me."
Eye Patch dug a stopwatch out of his pocket.
"Ready? Steady? Go!"
The swordsman rushed toward the closest zombie, a teenage boy who looked like he'd been about Benny's age when he died. The blade swept upward in a glittering line that sheared through the zombie's right arm at the shoulder, and then he checked his swing and sliced down to take the other arm. Instantly, he pivoted and swung the sword laterally and chopped through both legs an inch below the groin. The zombie toppled to the ground, and one leg, against all odds, remained upright. The three men burst out laughing.
"Time!" yelled Eye Patch and read the stopwatch. "Holy crap, Stosh! That's 2.99 seconds!
"In 3 cuts," shouted Stosh. "I did it in 3 cuts!"
They howled with laughter, and the third man, Denny, squatted down, wrapped his burly arms around the limbless zombie's torso, picked it up with a grunt, and carried it over to the wagon. Eye Patch tossed him the limbs, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then he added them to the pile. The kicking game started up again. Stosh drew a pistol and shot one of the remaining zombies in the chest. The bullet did no harm, but the creature turned toward the impact and began lumbering in that direction. Denny yelled, "Jump spinning back kick!" And Eye Patch leaped into the air, twisted, and drove a savage kick into the zombie's stomach, knocking it backward into the others. They all fell, and the men laughed and handed around a bottle while the zombies clambered awkwardly to their feet. Tom leaned close to Benny and whispered, "Time to go." He moved away, but Benny caught up to him and grabbed his sleeve.
"What the hell are you doing? Where are you going?"
"Away from these clowns," said Tom.
"You have to do something."
Tom turned to face him.
"What is it you expect me to do?"
"Stop them," Benny said in an urgent whisper.
"Why?" "Because they're... because..."
Benny sputtered. "You want me to save the zombies, Benny? Is that it?" Benny, caught in the fires of his own frustration, glared at him. "They're bounty hunters, Benny," said Tom. "They get a bounty on every zombie they kill. Want to know why they don't just cut the heads off? Because they have to prove that it was they who killed the zombies, and that they didn't just collect heads from someone else's kill. So they bring the torsos back to town and do the killing in front of a bounty judge, who then pays them a half-day's rations for every kill. Looks like they have enough there for each of them to get almost 5 full days' rations."
"I don't believe you."
"Keep your voice down," Tom hissed. "And yes, you do believe me. I can see it in your eyes. The game these guys are playing? That's ugly, right? It got you so upset that you wanted me to step in and do something. Am I right?" Benny said nothing. His fists were balled into knuckly knots at his sides. "Well, as bad as that is, I've seen worse. A whole lot worse. I'm talking pit fights where they put some dumbass kid, maybe someone your age, in a hole dug in the ground and then push in a zombie.